When last we left our brave podcasting heroes, they were in the throes of the Book of Erotic Fantasy, an unofficial supplement for Dungeons & Dragons Revised 3rd Edition. If you'd like to hear context for what the fuck we're talking about, you are going to have to listen to episode 4. This podcast starts in medias res as they plow back into this strange nude world. Sex. The final front and rear. These are the voyages of this podcast enterprise. Its 5-year mission: to explore strange nude worlds, seek out nude life and nude civilizations, to boldly come where no woman has come before.
Shit, we're being tapped!
Is Craig an NSA plant?
He legally has to tell us if he is.
I'm not aware of any law that says he has to tell us whether he's flora or fauna.
Whatever. You can't say something, like, vague and then do a joke about how, like, what you said was vague and could be taken in multiple different ways. That is, like, the worst possible version of an already bad joke that I hate.
My apologies, I will refrain from doing so.
That's okay, like, you know me. The only thing I like more than, like, not being annoyed is being annoyed.
There's definitely an Oglaf about why do people come here. I assume there are people who can orgasm from outrage alone.
Yes. It's not even outrage, it's just sort of like being peeved, you know?
Uh-huh.
Being knocked.
Being displeasured? No, that's... If I say displeased is a normal thing to say. If I say displeasured, I sound like a pervert.
Yeah, you do.
I'm not saying I'm not a pervert, but maybe not the kind of pervert that I would prefer to be known as.
Either way, right? Okay, are you in the document?
Yes. I've been.
We were down at number 3, new classes.
Indeed. They have one new full class in here, and I think there's two new. Oh yeah, there's two full new classes, but or three? I can't actually remember. Hold on. The first new class is the Imagist, which the Imagist casts from their appearance score, and it, which, you know, I guess they want to make a class that uses a new mechanic, but. It has the idea of like gifted from birth with natural beauty, and it just says in background from birth. Imagists tend to be thought of as attractive, cute babies. By the time they reach adolescence, they're clearly possessed of remarkable physical beauty, and I don't like that.
I mean, look, I can understand that. Like, I think, like, yeah, like. I can't help that, because that actually happens to me. Like, this is describing the kind of rough arc of my life, is that I have become consistently more and more beautiful year upon year upon year. But yeah, I'll be honest, I skipped the new classes. I didn't make any notes on these because I just got too annoyed at them.
Mm-hmm. And not in a fun way, I'm assuming.
No, not in a fun way. Making characters in D&D is, like, the thing that I am, like, possibly, like, the least amused about. I just don't... It's annoying to me, because you have to, like, keep track of so many, like, spells and skills and things and, like, numbers, and it's like, man, I just want to fucking grill, and you're gonna make me, like... You're gonna make me worry about all these fucking, like, spells and different things. I just... Anyway, I'll let you do the talking, because I'm just gonna... Yeah, I didn't too long, didn't read.
You're so valid, Pat. I guess, really, you know, I don't mind the idea of, like, you know, casting from hotness or getting more hot. What bothers me is that they start out hot. Are you...
you're a hot baby? What is this implying?
To be fair, I think that is just like, well, because appearance is not just like being hot, it's also like being cute, which is why I guess babies get it. But that's like, the problem is it's just sort of like, because it's just sort of how nice you look. It doesn't take into account the different ways in which people can look nice.
Yeah, and it even says like images tend to equate beauty with goodness. And I'm just like...
Well, it's what, from what I understand, from a vast number of Tumblr posts, that's a thing you shouldn't do.
Tumblr's right for once.
Yeah.
I also think it's funny that, well, okay, this is so fucked, though. Imagists also can use their cuteness for bluff diplomacy and leadership. Leadership was a feat that essentially gave you, like, followers, people who were, like, fanatically devoted to you, which was a whole fucking other mess of...
Oh, yeah. I know about this. That's the Alpenhornomancer.
God. I don't know if I've heard the Alpenhornomancer.
Oh, it runs off the same kind of, like, meat and bones as the Jumplomancer, which you may have heard of.
I don't know if I've heard the Jumplomancer either.
Okay, quick Precy, there was a talent that let you swap diplomacy, brackets very, very difficult to increase, with performance, brackets relatively easy to increase. Diplomacy had set DCs for the difficulty of things, and like I think a 30 up or something, or like a 40 up or something, was you fundamentally alter someone's perception of the world. And then like the one lower than that was people are willing to die for you. And so what you did is the Alpenhornomancer is that you did a perform check using an Alpenhorn, which has an audible range of 3 miles, and everyone within that range will now willingly die for you.
That's okay.
The Jumplomancer is the same thing where you replace diplomacy with performance, but you then replace performance with acrobatics, and then you jump so high people think you are the moon.
Good God.
You can fundamentally alter someone's, like, perception of the world using diplomacy.
Christ.
Now you see why I find building characters in D&D tiresome and annoying.
No! I don't understand why... Okay, I guess I can understand that. I'm just sitting here like, this is... I love it when a game breaks like this.
I know. It's very good.
This would be hell to actually play with. I do understand that. I think if I was a DM and somebody tried to pull the Alpenhornomancer, I would simply say, no, these people are going to die for the Alpenhorn, not for you. they have no idea who this is. They just know that they heard a fucking Alpenhorn song so beautiful, they'd die for
Fool!
It.
Dr. Doom toots where he pleases!
Exactly!
Alright, cool. So, where were you?
We have sex monks, and I don't care enough about the sex monks. They can shapeshift, which is kind of cool. God, who am I, and what have I done, as I've said... I don't care about the sex monks. You made sex monks boring.
That's the problem. It doesn't make D&D more interesting. It makes sex boring.
Distressing.
So yes, you don't care about the sex monks. Who's next?
We have the tantrist who can like metamorphose sexual energy into magical power. And I like this one because it's about... You fuck to recharge your spells. And there's something very good to me about a world where I guess like it's an excuse for sex. You know, I like it when there's convoluted magic physics reasons to have sex with someone.
Well, of course, that's why we're doing this podcast.
Exactly.
It's not just, hey, I'd like to have sex with you, you're quite pretty. It's, hey, I need you to have sex with me so I can power up my magics.
With a Y and a K.
Mm-hmm.
I And what's also interesting is, like, they're focused on evocation. They're really good at, like, you know, big, powerful beams and blasts.
God, Lord, do I hate a beam.
Oh, are you more of a ray girl?
No, I... Every single fucking, like... Okay, the climax of every single Marvel movie in the last, like, decade and a half has been, like, the finale has either been a portal or a beam. Like, there are fundamentally two kinds of Marvel movies. They're either portal movies or they're beam movies.
Having only seen, like, two Marvel movies in my life, I am still filled with childlike wonder and amazement at the sight of a beam. Or perhaps the thought of a beam. I'm sure the sight is rather underwhelming.
To be fair, I think the only beam that I am, like, the only beam that I have affection for is the Ion Cannon Frigate from the Homeworld games. Like, that's my sort of, you know, like, that's my hear me out, basically.
Uh-huh. Okay, this can't just be the beam podcast. I can't just think about good beams. It is also interesting to me that Tantrists, their spellbooks are, like, scarification-based. That's very charming to me. Or not charming, as no, I think it's like genuinely interesting to me. Like, it's a, you know, it's... I like alternate spell storage mechanisms for wizards. I had a wizard once who kept her spells as a deck of cards. It is also interesting, just in like a gameplay perspective of, well, this is something that they can't take away from you, the way you, like, a wizard can lose their spell book. And, you know, that doesn't always necessarily have to be a plot point, but it is, you know, this is 3.5. This is the era of, oh, we're going to study every tiny interaction.
Okay. And then are we into the...
The prestige classes.
Oh, God.
Like prestige television, I would assume.
Prestige classes, like multiclassing, can get in the bin. Do not make me read more than one, like, different class. Give me one sheet and, like, preferably, like, give me a system for leveling up that has, like, one step. Like, two steps if you're feeling fancy. Like, I have played multiple games where I have, like, simply not leveled up my character week on week on week, simply because I was like, well, I know how my character works. I don't want to change that, because then I'll get confused.
We have the village bicycle cleric.
Yeah, I see that in the notes.
As you can imagine, I'm very normal about this.
Yes.
We got the divine celibate, which is... I really don't understand entirely what they were going for in terms of celibacy classes or whatnot. Like, I'm not sure what the intended experience of play there is.
I think my guess would be that in the same way that, like, I think you mentioned earlier, like, the idea that, like, it's not a game for simulating, like, what it's like being pregnant. It's more a sort of consequences generator. I think that's kind of what you're doing if you're playing a celibate character in this, is you are playing someone who, like, you know, has that sort of, like, a risk hanging over them that at any minute they could lose, like, everything that they've worked for.
I'm fairly sure that the Code of Chastity, like, doesn't, like, okay, that, oh, this is very interesting, that you can, being assaulted only makes you lose your powers for a month, so I think you're right on the money that it is a, like, a consequences simulator thing.
Yeah, like, it's... Everyone else is, like, having sex as part of this game, presumably. And then, like, you've specifically chosen your character not to because, like, presumably you're, like, you know, some kind of, like, appalling kind of cussed person who likes playing a sort of, you know, like, awkward character who doesn't do what everyone else is doing. So actually, kind of, this is a character for me, so...
I was gonna say.
Yeah, yeah. I have frequently and often made characters which did not work, like, on purpose. Like... Yeah, my characters a lot of the time are, hey, wouldn't it be funny if this guy was broken on purpose?
So this is a form of... So I guess it's a meta-chastity thing.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Yeah, it's not just putting diegetic constraints on yourself. You are also putting, you know, like, you are constraining yourself in non-diegetic ways.
Mm-hmm. There we've got a prestige class for dominatrixes, which is the most fucked up thing imaginable to me, because... It plays with rules for changing your alignment. They can make you more lawful.
Yeah, but like, you know, like alignment isn't what you do. Like, basically, like what that is like the equivalent of that would be someone like you have sex with someone and like it turns out they've like, I don't know, like changed your like national insurance number by like one digit or something. Like changing your alignment is like, it's an annoying like bureaucratic thing. It doesn't actually change who you are as a person.
Yeah, again, it's a consequence.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It just means that you have to, you know, like, you have to, like, fuck around and wait until, you know, like, until all the paperwork comes back and the world agrees, oh, yeah, shit, you are actually, you know, neutral good, because you've been doing all these neutral good things. All right, fair enough.
Every day, I am troubled by what this book implies.
It's a lot. Also, fun fact, Dominator is also a class in Radiance. Radiance also has a load of horny classes and a load of like horny stuff in the core rulebook. You know, if it didn't take an if this already wasn't, you know, like pushing like 3 hours, like we could it would be fun to see like what we could get out of like the Radiance rulebook. But they also had a Dominator class. Preferred weapon was whips.
Obviously,
was, you know, had a lot of, you know, like combat controller abilities where you know sort of, you know, like pin people down and tie them up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As you would expect,
you know, every polycule needs the striker, the defender, the leader, the controller.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure I can just map that onto my own polycule now that I think about it. we've got the Fey Enticer, who is mostly just, I think they're to take advantage of, they had like a new Feyborn prestige class, or not prestige class, like per species template sort of thing.
Mm.
And we also have the Frenzied Disciple, who is just a Bacchant.
What?
One of the Bacchantes, the followers of Dionysus. They rend a guy limb from limb, like that's the Orphic Mysteries.
Oh, that is not how I pronounce. That is not how I pronounce like Bacchus.
So be it.
Yeah. Anyway, so it goes.
We also have the Harem Protector, which is very funny to me because it's a, you know, it's the stereotypical like eunuch who doesn't have sex with the harem.
Yeah, it's the strip club bouncer.
Right. But it's also, you just have to have this, the like sterile feet, which means if you have your tubes tied, you can be a eunuch here.
Oh yeah, you can still be like, you know, you can still be concealed carrying so long as you're firing blanks, so to speak.
Delightful way of phrasing it, thank you.
Anytime.
There was also a eunuch prestige class in Osler Adventures where you did actually have to get your balls cut off.
Jesus Christ.
God, that was so wild because it...
Also, not knowing what you're referring to, I'm forced to assume the Osler is ostrich.
Is that a slur for anyone?
I don't know, probably.
No, my friend, I'm referring to Oriental Adventures.
Oh, that one! Fucking hell. Oh, God.
It explicitly said that, like, in D&D societies with, like, quote, Oriental, unquote, flavoring, and, but also the, like, the standard set of species, it explicitly says half-orcs frequently become eunuch warlocks because it's one of their best chances of, like, attaining social power.
Huh. Yeah.
There's a lot in there.
In many ways, the OGL was a mistake. But anyway, moving on.
Oriental Adventures was from inside the house, my friend.
Oh, God. Ah, well, nevertheless.
We have the Handfasting Prestige class, which tells me a lot about the people who wrote this.
Oh, what, are you implying that perhaps these people who are into kinky sex may also have been involved in paganism? Goodness gracious. How incredible. What a staggering leap of logic.
You. I specifically mean, there's types of paganism without hand fasting in them, Wash.
Yeah, but like, you know, the kind of people who are writing like a D&D book about sex? Come on.
Well, yes. Anyway. There is a prestige class that has nothing horny about it, except the flavor text is, You merely cast spells. I interact with a spell. It's the difference between masturbation and making love. And the idea that you're, like, fucking your spells is so much to me.
Yeah, that one's the one where it's, like, all about, like, meta magic stuff, isn't it?
Yes.
An interesting way of phrasing things, I feel.
It's interesting, but they also don't do anything with it!
Hey, what if we had a wizard who was just sort of, like, horny for his spells?
That would rule, and they never explore it!
No. No, they do not.
We have the Piercing King class. Not much to say here. We got the Rake, which... Okay. The thing about the Rake is there's one particular ability. At their fifth level of the Prestige class, Forgetful Caress. You can essentially jerk the memories out of someone.
To be fair, I have that anyway. Like, specifically, I have that spell effect occur to me, like, all the time.
Well, sure, but...
What? Ask anyone. They will tell you I am a very forgetful person.
Yeah, but the idea that it's something that like, you can actively do to someone and you get to select which memory. You can make someone come so hard they forget their own name.
Interesting. I'm just gonna salt that one away for later.
You can, I don't know, make them forget their passwords. The final prestige class is the sake, or okay, there's the final one is the voyeuristic wizard. But before that, there's sacred prostitute, which number one, you have to have the sexually open society feat.
That is not true. Actually, no, okay, I guess if you're specifically a sacred prostitute.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if you're gonna be like a temple prostitute, you're gonna have some kind of like, you know, you're gonna have some kind of like institutional backing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, they can heal and see the future while they fuck you, or might be an or, but whatever. To me, I'm just thinking about how this is gonna get industrialized. Like, this is absolutely the Eberron locus of my brain, but you know, if this is a thing that makes healing or divination more effective, you're gonna get like institutionalized sexy nurses.
Congratulations, Hal. We've just found a new job for you in Eberron, I guess. It's medically important and in fact vital for the functioning of this hospital for you to wear like a slutty nurse outfit and have a sex with as many of the doctors as possible.
No, with the patients, you ass!
I don't know. I didn't look up how it worked. I told you. I'm getting mad about a game I haven't played.
Fair enough. Also in Eberron, the stereotypical sexy nurse is a halfling, so you have to keep that in mind. Short stacks.
Yeah, why not?
Anyway. We then get into spells, and this is going to be a slog, and I'm not going to go through it very much, but the notes that I... Or, actually, no, you had some notes here.
Yeah, I think my take on the spells is, number one, the way D&D does magic, I fundamentally disagree with. I think that it is bad, stupid, and wrong. Like, you know, very much on a personal level, like, you know, I understand some people get a lot out of it. I am not one of those people, and personally, I think the fact there's, like, a big, like, chapter in the book that says, like, here is all the magic, and it's like, oh, that's it? You have one chapter for, like, the unknowable wonder of, like, magic and the world. You have, like, a finite number of spells, several of which are just named after, like, dead blokes. But I think, in this specifically, like, the spells... Like everything else in this book, it gives you an opportunity to see the preferences and the priorities of the authors.
Mm-hmm.
The book that is giving you all the options you need to have an adventure that is as horny as possible, but in a finite medium, like those options are going to be limited by the perspective of the authors. And what they value is highlighted, what they don't is elided, and things work the way that they think that things should. which means that, you know, we can interrogate some interesting things out of how they've constructed spells in this book and how those mm-hmm. interact with, like, the world it implies.
Sure. I think the one that grabbed me first was the perversion domain, which the spells here are reverse gender, cursed orgasm, impotency, fiendish seed, baleful polymorph, symbol of fear, insanity, symbol of insanity, energy drain. Only the first four are horny. The rest are just, like, real fucked up things to do to someone.
I mean, as far as I can tell, like, this is basically just a transition timeline.
I guess?
Like, yeah, reverse gender. Well, there you go. Cursed orgasm speaks for itself. Impotency. I'm sure any trans femme can relate. Fiendish seed, again, you know, needs no explanation.
I think it's important to note, to explain that, like, lets you Rosemary's baby someone.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm not wrong. Baleful polymorph, symbol of fear. I mean, like, you know, what's the etymology of phobia, as in transphobia? Insanity, like, have you seen what people post like? Symbol of insanity. And, you know, energy drain is just, I mean, I don't know, I'm a sleepy bitch. I gotta go to bed. I gotta become blanket pilled.
We don't energy drain others.
No, I know, I energy drain myself.
Ah, so you simply hit yourself with your own beam.
Exactly. I'm being attacked with a beam that's having an effect, and the effect is that it's making me very eepy.
You're the one who eeps.
God sends his warmest milk to his eepiest soldiers.
God has milk?
So, moving on.
No, you come back here and talk to me about Milky God.
There might be a band called God Milk, I think. Not sure. I wouldn't be surprised if there was.
Well, it would be Jesus Lactose. Like, you know, he's not Christos anointed, he's lactose. He's covered in milk.
Milk Christ. So.
No, not Christ. If he's Milk Christ, then he's got milk and oil.
Whatever. I don't care. I'm not religious enough to have an opinion on this.
Religious either. I just like linguistics and milk.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, we're not going to go through all of the spells, but I think we can go through a couple to kind of give you a sense of, like, what these people are considering, like, important. Mm-hmm. So, there's disrobe, which removes all non-magical clothing, which is very amusing because that means that you can definitely have a situation where someone gets hit with disrobe and they lose everything except for their, like, enchanted helmet. And it's just like, babe, don't you want to slip into something more comfortable? I am most comfortable when I am impervious to all forms of attack.
Exactly.
There is suspicion, which gains a vision of the target's last sexual encounter, which I guess is useful for, like, if you want to do infidelity drama stuff, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very telenovela.
Yeah, or, you know, like, chronologically non-contiguous cuck porn, I guess. There is a lot of stuff involving ancestry and fertility. There is analyze ancestry, which is, like, kind of the one drop rule spell. It determines 10 genealogical generations of a creature, which, like, why would you need that, like, generally speaking?
Presumably to determine, like, will this child inherit the throne?
I mean, I guess, but, like,
It also says the identity includes name and race, and it doesn't specify anything else.
That's pretty funny, because that implies that, like, people's names are going to not, like, you know, like, repeat within families. Like, that's famously a thing that never happens.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. There's detect pregnancy, which is as it sounds. A fun one, which is innocence of the virgin, where target loses all knowledge of sex and suffers a minus 10 to all related skill checks, which is, I guess, like, again, that's... it's an interesting one. that would work in a kind of like carry-on setting, you know? You know, like if you have, you know, like a Lothario character suddenly be like, oh god, I've completely forgotten what sex is.
See, for me, number one, again, it's a consequence, right?
Yeah.
Number two, I have always wanted to do this hypnosis scene.
What, just having to be, like, reminded of how sex works?
Well, having to... Getting to experience it for the first time again.
True.
Anyway, there's also a spell that just, like, instantaneously gives someone an orgasm, and that's a first-level cleric spell. This changes all religion.
Kind of does, yeah. Fucking hell. Plus, like, I think it probably changes, like, a lot of society. Like, if you can just go to church and receive, like, an instant, like, it doesn't say that it's, like, mind-blowing or anything, but if you can, you know, like, guaranteed get off in, like, seconds, and all you need is, like, one level in cleric, like, man.
Also, it's so funny to me that Arcane Mark appears to have had its first printing here. Because this thing shows up in the 3.5 player's handbook as just like, you know, it's a wizard's, you know, a wizard sign sort of thing. But here it's explicitly the Hickey spell.
God. Of course.
There's also a grope spell, which is just like mage hand, but it fills you up.
Mage hand, but sexy.
Uh-huh. Also, there is a spell. It's called Hedonist's Delight. You confer on the subject heightened sensitivity to pleasurable sensations. Food tastes better, cloth feels softer, sex stimulates more strongly, and orgasms approach awe-inspiring. Any cure spell cast on the target is maximized. Any craft check the target undertakes during the duration receives a +2 bonus. Huh. And I'm just sitting here like, what does this mean?
I mean...
What does this mean about healing and craft and the way that human brains and bodies work in this world?
I mean, I think what it means is, I think it's pretty clear. I think it means that, like, basically, like, every single workshop and factory in the country is full of people sucking and fucking. We have invented the dick-sucking factory. It's just that dick-sucking is a thing that is kind of incidentally produced as, like, a byproduct of, like, industrial processes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, this is a world that has office slots.
Oh god. To be fair, like, the sex... you don't actually need to have sex to, like, benefit from Hedonist's Delight. It's just that, incidentally, while you are better at building things, you are also better at sucking and fucking, I guess?
Mm-hmm. And also, you heal faster!
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's just kind of, you know, everything's better.
Again, I really feel like this setting implies that there is universally therapeutic value in the nurse giving you sloppy toppy.
I think there is. I think that is a fairly clear thing. Moving on, there's also a couple of other spells. There's Vision of Exquisite Pleasure, which produces sexy visions during combat and stuns. And then there's also Wet Dreams, which produces sexy visions while asleep and makes someone tired. And Wet Dreams is the higher level spell, which, I don't know, it just seems odd to me that, like, the one that you would cast on someone who is, like, already at more of a disadvantage for reason of being, like, tucked up in bed, that's the one that's harder to cast, not the one that you have to do, like, in the heat of, like, combat.
Well, no, it's from a game design perspective, I do understand why this is a thing. It's because Wet Dreams fucks up your rest cycle.
Right, okay.
It is a spell that makes it harder for you to recover your, like, abilities over the night's rest.
Okay.
Whereas the combat one is of shorter duration and impact.
Okay, that makes sense.
Do you want to talk about reverse gender?
Yeah, I can talk about reverse gender. So reverse gender, it presupposes that gender is polar and that polarity can be reversed. I mean, that's a fairly, like, standard fucking, like, take in terms of cis normativity. It's just kind of say, you know, like, well, look, there's men and there's women, and you can kind of, like, flip-flop between them, and there isn't really any sort of, like, it's basically denying the existence of the non-binary fun zone.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing which, like, I'll get into this, like, a bit later, but reverse gender also has the effect of, if you are carrying a child and you get hit with a reverse gender spell, it has the effect of, like, aborting the child on a saving throw. And this spell can be cast on you without you wanting it to be cast on you. And it just struck me as alarming or unsettling that you would, like, this specific outcome is not gone into in any detail. There is no, like, sidebar saying, like, hey, by the way, if someone gets hit with this spell and miscarries, maybe check with them to make sure they're okay with that, because that's something that people can have some, you know, trauma about.
Uh-huh.
But it's just kind of like, yeah, you fail saving throw and you lose the kid and da-da-da-da-da. It's like,
Again, it's a consequence. It's all a fucking game to you.
Yeah, exactly.
You do not deserve my breeding king.
Exactly. We've also got, moving on, because I'll get into more of that later, but let's just breeze through here first. We have jealousy, which is inflict damage if someone has sex with someone other than you, which, again, more like telenovela stuff.
Mm-hmm. We have a spell, kisses you back to life with true love's kiss, etc. And the fact that it has a scaling series of, you know,
how close you are to someone.
Yeah, like, apparently being a committed lover is the best way to kiss someone back to life. And it's, if you are just a sexual partner, that's not as good as committed lover, but it's still better than a blood relative.
Yeah, which is hilarious, because that implies, like, sexual partner is, like, that's anyone you've had sex with. Like, a one-night stand with someone. But, like, the idea that, okay, you have a one-night stand with someone, and you have, like, their contact in your phone. You're thinking, like, maybe I should get rid of them. But you keep them on hand as you're sort of, like, in emergency, call this person and, like, get them to kiss me back to life. Because, like, they'll have a better chance of doing it than, like, your adventuring party or your own mother.
I will say, I think it might just mean current sexual partner, but still.
I mean, what's current? Like, do you have to be having sex with them then? Does it have to be, like, a regular thing? What regularity of sex do you need to make them, like, a regular sexual partner? Is it, like, once a week, once a month? Do you need, like, a standing arrangement? How formal does that arrangement have to be? This is the problem. This is why I fucking hate this kind of magic. Because it turns everything into a fucking legal argument. It's the same thing where you have, like, having the gods being, like, people that you can just call up and get favors from. It turns religion into politics.
Right. We also have Mirror Talk, which is just a magic cell phone spell.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which I kind of like. It has a Discworld feel to it.
Yeah. Cursed Orgasm, which is just you make someone take damage when they come, which is basically just the loss of essence speech from Dr. Strangelove.
I haven't seen that. Oh. I have read a lot of Taoist texts, so...
I mean, basically Minecraft oof noise. There is also, as you said, there is Fiendish Seed, which, like... Yeah, like Rosemary's Baby, it makes them pregnant with, like, the Antichrist. You also have Celestial Seed, where you can impregnate someone with, like, a good child.
Christ.
Yeah, just regular Christ. And, like, you can do this regardless of precautions. Like, you can be wearing, like, as many layers of protection as you want. And, like, the bomber will always get through on Celestial Seed.
It also fucks me up that they have a contraceptive spell, but it's just for pregnancy. It does not prevent disease.
Well, fine, whatever. There's also Engorged Gate, which just makes your feet big.
Calling out clown girls.
Which is just a, like, the thing is, there's no other foot stuff in the book that would suggest that someone in here was, like, a foot guy. But, like, this makes me think, like, was there, like, a kind of crypto foot fetishist, like, on the team who was just, like, ha ha ha, no, it'll be funny, like, somebody becomes, like, all, like, clumsy and their feet are all big. It's a really good, like, you know, ability to, like, flip out during combat. And the whole time they're there just, like, seething with barely contained lust at the concept of, you know, like, a paladin with big feet.
Well, and also it explicitly says that it makes your feet big the way it makes the way an erection makes a dick or a fuck me a dick big. Like this is the spell of your feet get a boner.
Yeah, exactly. There's also another interesting one. We have impotence, which has an interesting dichotomy in it, in that it makes men unable to have sex and makes women uninterested in having sex, which is, I think, a pretty modern sort of dichotomy to have, for that to be the distinction, that, like,
yeah,
men want sex but maybe unable to, like, perform, whereas women are the ones who, like, just don't want to have it, and that's... Like, the idea that women don't have sex because they don't want to, rather than that because they can't for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there's... It's not a fucking, you know, vaginismus spell.
Yeah, exactly. Which is interesting. There's also Liar's Curse, which is just any body part becomes larger when a target lies, which is extremely, like... I mean, you know, that's another, like, consequence one, and very sort of, you know, like... hilarity ensues with a capital H and a capital E. Irrational attraction, which is the subject that becomes enamored with, like, any type of creature.
It's very Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah. Youth's beauty, which is your appearance improves with age explicitly because you look younger. You know, they're not doing, like, a Helen Mirren thing here. Like, it is just, like, you still appear young even at, like, advanced age.
Mm-hmm.
There is also depilatory, which is a spell which removes hair, and there is no corollary spell to make hair grow, which is interesting. I think that speaks to, like, the priorities of the writers.
There is a disease that makes your hair grow.
Yes, but again, it's not something that you can do at will. Like...
Mm-hmm. I am now just imagining a classic.
I don't know why I'm going to bat for, like, you know, like, people who like, you know, hair. I mean, you know, like, but I think, yeah, like, it's important to interrogate, like, why is it that this book, you know, is introducing sex, which is, as we all know, a many splendid thing, but is then specifically saying, like, oh, there's a spell to make sure you've got no hair, but it's like, okay, like, what if a character, like, wants hair, though?
I mean, I think you just have to collect the hair from the people who cast depilatory. I'm now also imagining some kind of, you know, classic wizard duel, except they're competing to see, you know, I cast... Can you remove hair faster than the other wizard can grow hair?
God. I'm sure that's someone's thing.
It is now, quantum fetish mechanics. There's a spell called Phantasmal Lover, which is essentially just a waifu blast.
Yep.
And Unseen Lover, which you're also fucking relieved this is third edition, so I can't cast this shit as a ritual and just, you know, have a magical construct grope me on the hour.
There is also Alter Self or Disguise Self, which says that can be used to change the body in pretty much any way, to the extent that you can swap out genitals, but these will be non-functional on the basis that these do not change your quote-unquote true gender, which, like, reads as, like, clueless rather than, like, intentionally offensive, but does also, you know, raise the fun concept of, you know, like, well, okay, like, what? Okay, cool, we're doing, like, you have, like, an inbuilt, like, you know, a gender at, like, you know, the quantum level, and it's like, well, okay, cool, like, you know, chop me up and find, you know, the atoms of gender in me.
Are you doing, like, a Death from Discworld bit?
Of course I am.
Well, it's in that case...
It's a good metaphor.
I challenge you to tear the universe apart and find one atom of gender, one molecule of masculinity.
Fascinating. There's also Atonement, which, and I quote, can restore the status of a chaste character. Like, specifically chaste rather than, like, virginal. But I think this is similar to, like, alignment stuff, where it's sort of, like, chastity is a sort of bureaucratic status rather than a spiritual or intellectual or philosophical one. Like... you have a spell that makes you chaste, and then you can stop being chaste by doing something else, but you can always cast the spell again?
I mean, it is like a somewhat more... It has an experience point cost, which is a disincentive for player characters to do it. But yeah, it is a thing where you can essentially get down on your knees and say, God, I'm very sorry I had sex. Can you please make me Galahad again?
Exactly, yeah. It's... Yeah, which I think, you know, again, it's which is, you know, kind of like you can argue that's a spell which is about avoiding consequences. You know, that's a way of, you know, like it gives you an out, basically. Also, we have polymorph, baleful polymorph, which again has a section talking about changing gender and yet again can cause a loss of child, sterility and injury to someone carrying a child. Interestingly, it does. Yeah, like the concept of like a pregnant man is seen as one which is, you know, like something you really have to like fight for, and you have to like, you know, you have to roll some like meaty like saving throws to like survive that.
Mm-hmm.
And like changing gender is always posited to like cause to make you unable to like carry a child. Moving on. So there's a series which is talking about like new ways of using existing spells. And so there's the foursome of like charm, dominate person, hypnotism, and suggestion, which is explicitly said to be capable of making things do things they would not otherwise want to do. And kind of explicitly giving permission for players and GMs to use these spells in like the most problematic way you could, you know, like, you know, you can kind of say all kinds of, you know, glib things about, oh, you know, it's just, you know, like magical roofies and whatnot, but that's kind of, you know, it's being used to like, you know, talk someone round to something that they would not agree to were they not under the influence of a spell.
Right. And I think there's stuff about ways to provide consequences in universe for doing these assaults on people's bodies or like agency or whatnot. And you note that it doesn't say anything about what to do from an out-of-character GM administration perspective.
Yeah.
And there's no like safety tools things to say, or, you know, like there's not really a discussion of safe words. And I think there's two things going on here. One of which is this was written from a gaming culture of, well, it's just a game. It's not gonna bleed through. And that's obviously not the case. And I think speaks perhaps to the author's play styles more than anything else, where it's, you know, well, we all know it's a game. We know each other, and we know that, you know, we're not gonna do like an actual drawn out assault scene where it'll be, you know, sexy dubcon. But there's also this very interesting thing to me where it reads like the best way. I almost wonder how much this has to do with the fucking RPGA, with the like role-playing game alliance, the kind of big third edition organized play league, and which evolved out of, you know, the concept in early Gygaxian D&D where you would be bringing the same character to different tables, where, yeah. Because it wasn't a social interaction where you were relying on bonds of friendship, like the GMing mindset here was the best way of motivating game behavior is with in-game rewards, which was the style at the time.
Yeah, I think you've summed up my point there about the sidebar about kind of sex, spells, lore, and morality, which is, yeah, it's, I think you're right in that it is potentially about leveraging things kind of within the game rather than sort of like, you know, breaking the magic circle and saying, hey man, what the fuck are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Making it about your character also, like, I don't know if you've ever read the like thing about the it's the like nerd social fallacies about like exclusion.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
The idea that like a nerd kind of social group will be unwilling to exclude someone, and yeah, like raising an issue with someone outside of the game about what they're doing would raise the issue of like, well, are you saying that they're a bad person? And it's like, I mean, you know, like potentially depending on what they're doing, but like that's an awkward and difficult conversation to have with someone who you are sort of, you know, like trying to think of as like your friend, I guess, or like, you know, like, if not your friend, then you're like a friend of a friend.
Right. And also there's, I think one of the other problems of like the nerd social fallacy is that a lot of these people are otherwise isolated. They don't feel like they have other options.
Yeah. So you're more likely to kind of, you know, like use the rules as a kind of social arbiter in an awkward situation than, you know, use, yeah, actual social interactions.
This is very autistic. If we just do the rules perfectly, then nobody will ever get hurt.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So that's the spells, I think, and that's the thing. I do not feel that is a good way of doing games, basically, like at base. Is I don't think it's a good idea to just say, well, it's just a game, you know, like we can all just like, you know, everything can be like, you know, put off onto the rules. You know, we don't need to worry about, you know, like kind of interpersonal, you know, like how we're sort of doing, you know, like between ourselves, because, you know, like there are assholes in game groups. It is important to, you know, like some people got to be fucking ostracized.
I mean, I think some people, some groups find it necessary to ostracize some people.
Yeah.
You know, because if it's like a complete ostracization, then no, they don't have incentive to change. Or if they cannot find a new group, they have no incentive to change their behavior.
Yeah.
Anyway, do we want to go into equipment? I feel like I don't know if I have like a pretty bow to wrap this up.
No, I don't really have anything particularly interesting to say about the equipment pages.
I just wanted to say I think it's hilarious that they have like these little goblin chocolate candies that make it easier to conceive. Which, number one, where the fuck are goblins getting chocolate? Number two, it says that they're nipple shaped, which makes me realize these are just Hershey's Kisses. Which makes me think at some point, some of the writers of this book did a scene where, like, they fed somebody Hershey's Kisses and said, well, these are going to get you super pregnant.
I mean, potentially they did that. I don't know.
It's where my brain goes, I think, from both from a horny perspective and from a I am a GM who loves to use props if I can perspective.
Okay, gotcha.
I do also like that there is a bottle of lube that you can use to give yourself a +2 competence bonus on escape artist checks. Like, I really like the idea that it's easier to wriggle out of, you know, the bandit's manacles with your cleverly concealed bottle of sassy slickwid.
I like the pause there. It sounded like you were kind of leaning over your shoulder to see what the nearest fucking, like, bottle you had to hand was called.
That was what was happening.
Good God. Oh God! So yeah. Skimming over the equipment chapter.
There's two more things in the equipment chapter.
Oh no,
or three more things.
Okay, two more things. All right.
Number one, you can make a weapon that does non-lethal damage but makes people experience physical pleasure. And my terrible brain just went, "Wow, way to make police brutality even more scarring."
Yeah.
Like, you could, you know, this is...
getting hit with, like, the fucking, like, horny baton.
Uh-huh.
Getting hit with the water cannon that makes you come.
Yeah. It's like, you aren't physically damaged, but it felt good, and that is even more violating to you.
As I have said frequently, distressing.
There's also a fieldo that can get your GF pregnant.
I feel like fieldo sounds like one of those things, like a what for?
Sure. It's a strap-on you can feel. Is that clearer?
Yeah. It's much clearer.
There's also, you can find, and there are rules to make, the Gnomish Kama Sutra. And it says, creator must be a gnome. And there's other requirements for it, but it implies to me that the knowledge of the Gnomish Kama Sutra is encoded within gnomes.
Oh my God. Fuck me. So it's like the language from fucking Embassy Town? Like, these fucking gnomes just going around, like, able to speak in fucking, like, excerpts from the Gnomish Kama Sutra? That's... I feel like I'm saying this a lot, but distressing.
My sweetheart was explaining Embassy Town to me recently. I should really read that.
I think a lot about Embassy Town. I really like it. I'm a Johnny Mieville fan.
Mm-hmm.
The Scar was a better book than Perdido Street Station. Fight me.
I have no opinions on Gina Meaville. I have not read any of his books. I do also really want to read Railsea, just because I love moles.
Oh, Railsea is... If you like moles and trains, Railsea is basically the perfect book for you. I liked Railsea so much I gave my copy of it away, which is what I do with pretty much all of my most favorite books.
Uh-huh.
Which is annoying when you want to read them again, but still.
Yeah. Anyway, there's one final thing from the equipment section. Much like the Book of Vile Darkness and the Book of Exalted Deeds, the Book of Erotic Fantasy exists within this universe.
As written?
Presumably not.
Yeah, we'd hope not. Because if you make, like, levels and spells and, like, if you make experience diegetic, the whole world becomes terrifying.
There's the Brennan Lee Mulligan sketch about this.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no, it's... If you want to get good at sex, someone's gonna die, my man!
Exactly.
Anyway, I think possibly the thing that this does make me wonder, though, is, like, do the Book of Exalted Deeds and Book of Vile Darkness also... Do they have the rules in them? Is part of what gives these books such power the fact that they confer upon you the knowledge that you're a player character?
I think that would be an interesting thing to explore, in the idea that that's the thing that makes you, like, that's the thing why they're so powerful, but also, like, potentially can drive you to fucking, like, drive you to insanity.
Mm-hmm. God, okay. All characters who are virginal, chaste, castrated, asexual, or otherwise sexually inexperienced or unable to have intercourse, such as through having chosen the chaste life feat, to read the book, touch the book, take 5d4 points of damage. Reading it causes a geese effect, compelling them to have sex. Such converts immediately seek out a way to have sex, going to such extreme lengths as the Baleful Polymorph or Regeneration spells, which I think supports this theory, because if you know that you're a character in a sex game, you're going to want to engage with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also, it's, you know, like, so you can pick up, like, the physical book itself and wave it around at, like, a player who hasn't had sex and be like, "Woo, you will want to have sex." God. I'm sure you can get a big laugh out of in, you know, like, a gaming group in the early 2000s. So, yeah, are we done with the equipment section? Because we've still got a few pages to go.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't really care about any of the descriptions of deities. What I do care about is that it's all presented from essentially the perspective of a cleric of one of these characters. There's nothing about the laity, and that drives me insane.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's more sort of, you know, like, it's giving you an outline of what their, like, political priorities are. Like, it tells you what their political goals are, what their aims are.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they have real and physical and practical power. They have, you know, political agents. They've got, you know, spies and agents and things of that nature. You know, sure they're called clerics and priests, but functionally they're just fighting, like, a huge cold war on the, like, behest of their gods. Like, you know, all their domains are, you know, essentially just telling you, like, okay, this is what these gods are interested in achieving in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's broadly, like, not the way to do it, you know? That ain't it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all these gods are like variously horny to a greater or lesser extent. Mm-hmm. There's the only trans character in the book, kind of, which is Aluran, which is like a, like, hermaphroditic god who is, like, male and female. There's Civellis, who is the deity of chastity and restraint, who's depicted as wearing, like, bondage gear. Like, Caladis, who is the deity of marriage, but interestingly enough, like, not of any particular form of marriage. Like, any union is pleasing to Caladis, from what we can assume. Caladis would therefore be approving of, like, you know, a trade union. Caladis said there is power in a union.
This is just making me think of a world-building concept that I've always wanted to do something with, which is the classic four-person adventuring party is a legal institution like or replacing marriage. And you can do this in a serious, from the ground up, world-building sense of, like, okay, what does it imply about this society or this subset of society that the relationships you give legal preeminence are the ones, like, the adventuring party relationships, not any side romances. Or you could also say, you know, play for humor about, like, you know, when I was a boy, marriage was a rogue, a cleric, a wizard, and a fighter. And I don't see
We didn't have none of these sorcerers.
Are you a cleric or a fighter, son? You can make up your mind with this paladin nonsense.
What's like? I mean, that's interesting in the sense that, like, well, the idea of it being sort of like a social thing where it's, you know, like marriage and like the whole point is like the bonds of like amity between them, as opposed to what it is more likely to be, which is that an adventuring party would be more likely to be a form of like a limited liability company, you know?
Uh-huh.
Or like a tontine, you know? Like, those are the sort of like legal forms which are more akin and more familiar to like going into English and Welsh law again. But the Wills Act of 1837 grants the ability for like soldiers in combat and sailors at sea to make privileged wills, which like can be entirely like oral or like not follow the usual formalities of making a will. And I think that it would be entirely reasonable to say that adventurers would probably also be able to make privileged wills, since, sure, you know, they're extremely likely to die horribly at a moment's notice.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think exploring adventuring parties is like a legalistic entity. It's very fun and I think a very like fruitful thing. Getting back to the gods briefly, there is one who has like lifted a name from Shub-Niggurath from the H.P. Lovecraft books, the black goat with 1,000 young, who is basically like the goblin deity of like reproduction. And is basically just like, hey, what if like reproduction anxiety was an evil god who was trying to make the goblins fuck more and make more strong goblin babies? And that made me think about how like in most porn, like goblins are viewed as like hypersexualized temptresses.
A clay statue of a squat female goblin that most non-goblins find repulsive, yet at the same time alluring in a base way.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's... I don't know, man. I know that it's like, I know that it's fictional. I know that it's a story. I know it's this, that, and the other. I'm just thinking like, look, it's got to suck for a goblin to be, you know, like, got to suck for anyone who's like, you know, unreasonably sexualized. And like, you know, it's interesting that goblins can only be, you know, like creatures who can be killed at will, or they can be creatures who can be fucked at will. You know, there's no prospect of them just being kind of, you know, just having a normal time with it. Except in World of Warcraft, maybe, where they're kind of the Ferengi.
Oh, God.
What?
Oh, God. Oh, God, I'm having an existential crisis now.
Why, what happened?
How much of my disaster slut impulses are a reaction to societal vulnerability? Am I just out here, like, being the... Am I the goblin who leans into the hypersexual stereotype because it's better than being dead?
Fuck, that's a really... Number one, that's, you know, that's hypothetically grim for any, like, potential goblin, but that is also, you know, kind of practically quite grim for you. I'm sorry that I gave you an existential crisis by talking about, like, fucking goblin porn, I guess.
You can give me an existential crisis with anything, it's not hard. I'm also thinking now, like, this decision of... It's essentially just the same thing as all those romance novels about, like, taken by the Duke or sucking off the CEO.
In what way?
In that, you know, sure, part of my thing here is about being transgender, but it's also about poverty. That, you know, I would rather be given a place under someone's desk than no place at all. And that's by no means an uncommon... fantasy.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to fucking read Cam Spara's docile for this.
Goblins need to have like their version of like the game Spire, basically.
Yeah. Oh god. I No. I can't do this.
Not on mic.
I refuse the call.
Cut a mic.
Anyway, we have a bit in the a tiny bit of a monster manual here.
Yeah, there's a few new creatures, many of them sexy. Each one of them has like an example version of them, and also has like an entire section marked combat, which, you know, could be considered strange in a book of fucking. Like, why do we need to know about fighting? Isn't there enough of that in like all the other D&D books? Like, what? why can't we have like a section marked like how best to make love to this new creature? Like, yeah. We know how to kill things. Like, all the other books are for killing things. Like, this is meant to be the book for fucking things. Why are you telling me how to kill things?
Mm-hmm.
I got stricken by like the thing with the cherubim and fallen cherubim, where it's this fucking divine videodrome, like, war for the hearts and minds of the Faerunian populace. Like, why is that not a major thing? Why are you not presenting, like, a whole, like, a campaign arc about opposing divine forces trying to make the world horny in a specific way? And I'm realizing I'm just describing Monster Girl Encyclopedia, but, like, it's anti-world building. It's not about an excuse for sex.
No, it's...
I will also say that the one thing that I remember from this book, and I definitely think I remember from reading this as a strange, lonely teenager, was the pleasure golem, which is made of wax, covered in human skin, and then it has a fire elemental to make it, like, warm to the touch. And then the fucking, like, descriptive text for it, or, like, little flavor text thing is... It is from the pleasure golem's perspective, but, you know...
It's very doll girl.
Yeah, like, this is a doll. But it's also, like, much like modern doll Twitter, it's a psychological horror thing that wouldn't be out of place in Promethean the Created, and they just made it for... They don't tell you what to do with it! Like, what is the prompt here?
I mean, my guess is the prompt is that you basically just use it as a kind of, you know, like, born sexy yesterday, like, thing, where you're just kind of like, it's very beautiful and alluring, and it's meant to be for sex. But of course, you as an adventurer, you're not going to take advantage of this thing. You are going to, you know, teach it beyond the mere walls of this brothel. And, you know, like, eventually you're going to have sex with it as well, because, you know, why else would it look like that?
It's like, oh god, the fucking flavor text. I'm rereading this. I smell sex. I'm not sure what it is, but I know that I want it. That I'm made for it, and it is what will fulfill me. Light. It is dim, but it swirls with colors and objects. I see a form. It is where the smell came from. I can see the body. I don't know what it is, who it is, or what it is thinking. Except this. It wants me, and that is enough. It will fulfill me. It will give me what I need to be whole. And as I'm sure you can assume, Jen, I am incredibly normal about this.
Yep. Breathtakingly normal. We're reaching levels of normal that shouldn't be possible.
There's art too, and she's just kind of like slumped against the wall, and I'm just
like, same girl. We've all been there.
The pleasure golem cannot speak, but does emit arousing noises of pleasure during sexual acts. And I'm like, damn, this read me for filth.
Oh god, cannot relate. Hardcore cannot relate. Okay, it reminds me of, like, one character from Curse of Strahd, which I don't know if you've ever, like,
read.
Like, the abbot's monster, like, the kind of, like, the Bride of Frankenstein thing that the abbot's building. Who, like, in the book, like, in, like, Curse of Strahd, like, at base, like, can't talk. And it's like, fine, like, I don't know. I took that to be, like, a pretty, like, boring choice and decided when I ran it that she was going to be able to talk, because I thought that would be more interesting if you can, you know, like, get her opinion on things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like, it's a bride for Strahd, so why would you not make a bride who is, you know, like, capable of, you know, like, conversation and etiquette and deportment?
You can know etiquette and deportment without being capable of conversation.
All right, fine.
Seen and not heard.
Yeah. Well, moving on. Yeah, there's a big list of sex-based adventure concepts, or, like, adventure seeds. And it's significant mostly because, like, it features one of the very few explicit mentions of, like, a gay man is an adventure seed where the PCs need to help him with his, like, bigoted order of, like, paladins. And it's... There are three adventure seeds explicitly involving homosexuality, and all three are about, like, how it's frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it implies the adventurers are there to help the gays. Like, it's not homophobic. It posits a homophobic world, and that, like, the only situation in which a gay character's sexuality is important is the extent to which it, like, creates friction and drama, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't, you know, I mean, just, you know, it's... I don't know. I think there's probably, like, a more charitable reading of it than that, but I'm not in the mood to be charitable towards this book.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's mostly just that it's an easily stigmatized form of sexuality. Like, or it's yeah. something where people, like, know how to play a stigma around it rather than making, you know, their own original in-universe stigmas to adventure about.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
But I will say that a lot of these aren't calls to sex. They're calls to traditional adventure.
Yeah, yeah, they just happen to be adjacent to sex.
Oh, here. Okay, there is one homosexual adventure seed that isn't inherently homophobic.
Okay.
The king has died and the queen declares her female lover as her new legal mate, much to the consternation of the populace. And that doesn't necessarily have to be homophobic. That could just be about, you know, bloodline or the continuation of the royal bloodline. But the default would be homophobia for the average reader, I think.
Mm.
In addition to these, there's some, like, organizations for players and whatnot. There's Wizard Bohemian Grove,
mm-hmm.
where you become invisible to, like, conceal your identity. But it also is very much like this rich boys club sort of sex club thing.
Mm.
I don't know. I think Bohemian Grove might not actually be horny enough for this. I think maybe I'm thinking of fucking... Oh, what's the place where Mycroft hangs out?
Oh, the fucking Diogenes Club or something.
Yeah, they're all fucking masturbating in their barrels and just at the Diogenes Club. Oh, God. Mycroft Holmes, as depicted in the book, is like absolutely an archetype of gay man that exists today. More power to him.
Hmm.
Anyway, there's also a, like, top-notch escort service, which is fine as, like, an organization for players to work with. Except one of the adventure seeds is, and I quote, "The characters have been hired by Madame Daimyo to locate new, quote, talent, unquote, for her newest bordello. She has received many requests for exotic women from the deep jungles to the south, and wants the characters to find at least four people, preferably two of each gender, to come work for her."
Edward Said has entered the chat.
Yeah.
Ronald Hyam's Sexualities of Empire slammed onto the desk. I am awake. My eyes are open. Textbook, like, sexuality and colonialism.
Yeah, this is horrifyingly colonialist, although not, I guess, more cult. I think it is notable in that it is not...
weirder and more, like... and ironically, kind of more, like, realistic way than a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, it's also not... species-based. It's just women.
Yeah.
And I know that they mean, like, you know, they want to find... She's talent scouting for, like, people who can... She's talent scouting for men, too, but it does kind of read as though she's looking to force-fem the boys.
Hmm. Yeah. Troubling.
I don't know, man. This ain't my post-colonial fantasy. My post-colonial fantasy is, like, surprising a big, burly Spanish sailor with my dick.
This ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, and then we just have the appendix.
Yeah, the appendix, which just has appearance stats for every monster ever. So if you need to know what the appearance stat of, for instance, an Alip is, it has it. It also has stats for, like, a cachalot whale. A cachalot whale, by the way, is a real animal. It's a fucking right whale. It tells you how fuckable a right whale is. For reference, by the way, it's below average.
No, that's a sperm whale.
No, it's not. Wait, what?
As far as I'm aware, a cachalot whale or a cachalot whale is a sperm whale.
Fuck, no, you're right, it's a sperm whale. Fuck, what? I think it was a... Okay, well, I was wrong. Fine, yeah, it's a sperm whale. Okay, cool, a sperm whale is below average, which is, like, clearly this fucking never read Moby Dick.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it does make somewhat more sense because you are trying to fuck it for the copious sperm, but...
Yeah.
But also, you know, are you aware of, like, how ogre intelligence works in D&D 5th edition?
Absolutely not.
They are less intelligent than gorillas.
Interesting.
Or I think it might be... whales, like, there's definitely animals that are less intelligent that are more intelligent than ogres, and yet ogres can still use language.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't feel know if I particularly feel the need to, like, sum anything up about what a better game mechanics for this would be, but I do think that for the world building, you need to... I think what this tells us about horny world building is that it is definitely context-based, and it, something that makes previous examples succeed where I think this fails is that previous examples are, even if they're not explicitly clear about what kind of sexual fantasy they're offering, they are clear about that they, whether or not they have a didactic position on sexual fantasies, they're at least clearly offering a specific kind of sexual fantasy or a specific kind of worldview.
Yes, whereas this is just sort of like, there is sex available for you in these different ways which we've just thought of.
Right, there is, this is...
It's scattershot. It's a sandbox, but it's like someone else's sandbox where they've sort of like thrown in a load of toys and you're like, where the fuck are you giving me these toys? These ones suck.
It is, you know, in issues of bad game design, as in kinks that might be considered immoral, we have to go, okay, what need does this serve? But the only need here is to put sex in the D&D. Like, there is nothing beyond that.
Yeah, it is.
It is coasting on its transgressiveness.
Exactly, yeah. It is pretty shallow. Yeah, as you say, it's like a pretty shallow like introduction of like trying to be like, if there was sex in D&D, and they kind of don't have a particularly good answer for that. Like, their answer for that is like, well, like this. And it's like, well, okay, cool. Like, the what you have posited is like not interesting and not, I don't know. Like, it's not particularly sexy, and it's not particularly, like, I don't know. It doesn't commit to being, like, out there enough to be, you know, like, a kind of wild and, like, bizarre, like, fantasy, like, fuckathon. But also kind of doesn't commit to just being kind of like, oh yeah, sex is, like, a fairly, like, you know, like, basic thing that you can include here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. It's a whole thing. That's my take. Also, one final thing. I've like scrolling through the back of this, I found out that like after the text of the OGL in the back, there's a comic by Phil Foglio, which took me out the first time I came across it. Like, in theory, I knew that like Phil Foglio did like horny comics, but like I'd never come across one in the wild, and coming across one like in the back of this like fucking threw me.
Yeah, I think the thing I have long maintained about Phil Foglio's art style is I enjoy the professor's Foglio's stories. I do not want to see Phil Foglio draw tits. It is not appealing to me.
Yeah, they're very much it's very much like, you know, like large circle, small circle.
Uh-huh. And
oh, there is also an ad for www.hypnox.com in Seattle, Washington, which offers art, erotic, fashion fetish, live events, music, portrait product, special effects. I think that's nice. I think more games should have ads from the contractors involved in making them at the back.
That's a good idea. I will say, this website still exists. It does not work well.
No. I suspected as much.
Oh, it still says, I was the photographer for the Book of Erotic Fantasy that was just released. Oh, good lord!
What?
Oh my god!
Oh, you, what?
The back cover!
Yeah?
Love and battle are both intimate acts, both done in heat and sweat with the sound of cries echoing in your ear. And really, who is to say which is the more dangerous? The Paladin Valeria are like lawful good sex examples. This could have been a thematic conceit. You could have developed on this.
They could have. What if you just went through D&D and systematically replaced every instance of roll initiative to start fighting was roll initiative to start boning down. Constructing a world where, like, that's the way that it's, like, sorted out. That's the way it's organized.
Mm-hmm. It's a world where you could have, you know, feasibly make a combat hand job dramatically satisfying because real things ride on that.
Right. It is...
Pun not intended.
It is working out a balance between, like, violence and sex and, like, you know, where, you know, like, the boundaries between, you know, like, you know, coercion and rape and assault, and also just, like, working out a way to, like, kind of maneuver around those. Like, achieving that would be an insane sort of, like, holy grail solution, but, like, the game that you could produce from it would potentially be, like, a fucking, like, world beater. A game which, by the way, I have been slowly rotating in my mind for many years. A game called Carry On Up the Tomb of Horrors, or Ua Dungeon Master, a game of fantasy sex comedy. I do not have an established rule set. I do not even have, like, a solid idea of what the minute-to-minute gameplay is, but it exists in my mind, and I am rotating it. And every day it is rotating slightly faster.
Yeah, so the same for me with Hero of Lost Endings, which is my horny Soulsborne Corruption of Champions snow clone.
I think that's the best thing you can say about the Book of Erotic Fantasy, is that like all bad game books, it inspires you to want to write something better.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about The Adventure Zone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always been my takeaway from like a lot of stuff. Like the podcast System Mastery, a very fun and good podcast, presents older game books where they describe the various different ways that they are not just problematic, but also just badly made or like don't work properly, but have interesting bits in them. And you're like, fuck me, I could do better than this.
Mm-hmm.
I think spite is an underrepresented motivation for some of the best works of human creativity.
Mm-hmm. I will fuck you regardless of whether or not you are better at this at game design.
Well, that's fine, but you know there are other people who whose fucking me may be dependent on how good I am at games design. So you know I'm gonna keep it up.
Sure enough. Well, I think that concludes the torturous fourth episode.
Yeah,
and I will start working on editing because I actually have mental health now.
Excellent, wonderful. Well, as ever, we can be reached at if you have any notes, anything you wish to tell us, email strangenudeworlds, all one word, @gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at worlds_nude on twitter.com, which as of this recording is still a functioning website to a greater or lesser extent.
And you can tune in next time when we discuss Omegaverse.
Yes, of course. Good night. Good night, listeners.
Stay safe, stay sexy. Don't stick your dick in the OGL.
Cool. Stop recording.